WSLR, LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota, and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Johannes Valdo with your WSLR News headlines for Tuesday, September 30th. Florida counties and cities hope the courts will stop state restrictions on local planning. Yesterday, 25 Florida municipalities, including Manatee County, filed suit against the state in federal court in Tallahassee over SB 180. That state law restricts any changes in development ordinances in counties within 100 miles of a declared natural disaster. In their lawsuit, the plaintiffs call SB 180 the largest incursion into local home rule authority since the adoption of the Florida Constitution in 1968. The law was originally intended to help people rebuild homes damaged in hurricanes, but developers cited it when they sued Manatee County in July over the county's attempts to introduce wetland protections and raise impact fees for new development. The plaintiffs include Manatee and Orange counties and 23 cities, including Naples, Fort Lauderdale, and Palm Beach. Just as public schools in Florida are facing unprecedented criticism and scrutiny by state authorities and are under pressure to privatize, Sarasota Superintendent of Schools received a national honor. The National Association of School Superintendents yesterday announced Terry Connor as the recipient of the 2025 Instruction Award. The association said Connor has implemented, quote, evidence-based teaching practices, rigorous curriculum alignment, and professional learning models that strengthen teaching capacity and improve student outcomes. Here comes more trouble for an already strained real estate market. Florida could be more affected than any state if the National Flood Insurance Program ends up frozen under a government shutdown that could begin today. That's the same day Congress is due to reauthorize the government-run flood program. If it fails to fund the program by midnight today, the 1.8 million existing policyholders in Florida will still get paid for claims, but no new contract could be written. And that would be a problem for property sales with mortgages that require flood insurance. Also, coverage could lapse for policyholders whose contracts expire during the government shutdown. This has been Johannes Valno with your WSLR News headlines for Tuesday, September 30th.
Jono, let's start with your earliest memory of the Mayaka.
Wow, I'm going to have to back up here. That's really hot. So I had been to Florida when I was 13, but I got nowhere near Sarasota. So I came to Sarasota in 1970 to attend New College. And started taking a class of environmental biology. And the class was distinguished by we had lots of weekend field trips. We went as far south as Marco Island and got to see the mangroves being filled in. And we went to workshops in St. Pete and traveled really around a lot of different parts of the state. But I hadn't, I didn't have a car, so I couldn't really get out to Mayaka. I wasn't aware of Mayaka. But there was somebody else in the class who was whose parents were coming to visit, and somehow I got invited to head out to Myakka Park. And my earliest memory, this would have been in the fall of 70, was not gators or the river so much as driving along the shore of the upper lake in a car and with the big oak trees. That's my earliest recollection.
Okay, so you have been involved with the Myakka River Management Council.
Well, you're getting way ahead of things here.
Okay, okay.
So I guess it was in the spring of 71 that we put in at Snookhaven and canoed down to Sanibel. You remember that?
I do.
So we, at the time, there was on the corner of Main and Lemon, the southeast corner of Main and Lemon, was a place called Ellie's, and it was sort of a all-purpose stationery kind of store. I don't know what the whole deal was, but they had a back room that sold USGS quadrangle maps. And so we bought a bunch of these maps that showed the route from Snookhaven down to Sanibel and put them in some sort of waterproof tube. I don't remember how many of us there were, do you? Any recollection?
Yeah, I think there were three canoes.
So it was a pretty rough trip. There weren't a lot of places to camp, and we had some bad sandfly nights, but we eventually made it to Sanibel.
And so what do you remember about the Myakka River on that trip?
Almost nothing. I remember Snookhaven, and I remember they had the docks were these like vertical pipes driven in the river with these concrete slabs, and they seemed really precarious. So I remember putting in, and I remember taking out at Wolfert. We just saw Wolfert on the map and assumed we could get out there. We had a biology teacher meet us there.
Yeah.
And we were using New College canoes, I assume, for that whole trip.
Yeah.
So that was the early 70s. And then in 1974, there was a local guy, Ken Langland, and he, for whatever reason, started, he did a couple of canoe explorations of the Myakka. And they did one in 74, and I don't have a complete list of who was on each trip, but at different times, Ken Alvarez and Alan Horton, I think Mark Evans may have been along, Betty Rushton, Warren Henderson, who was a state legislator at the time. So they were trying to better understand the river. And so the connection here is between Ken Alvarez, who was the district naturalist for what was DNR at the time. And he was headquartered in Osprey, but he had a special, even though he was a naturalist for the entire district, he had a special affinity for the Myakka. And I think he probably helped get you involved with your thesis research.
Mm-hmm. And then in 1975, the Liwan voters promoted the idea of designating the Myakka as a national wild and scenic river.
Right, and we're still trying to figure out which league member it was made the presentation. I'm going to get with the board records folks and see if they still have that resolution or whatever. But yes, the League of Women Voters approached the Sarasota County Commission and asked them to initiate or start a process to try and get the to consider the Myakka as a federal wild and scenic river.
And our local congressman promoted that, right?
Yeah, what was his name at the time?
Miller.
No. Well, it may have been Miller, but that's not who they appealed to.
Okay.
Miller may have been involved. It may come to us. That was a really long process. I think it took until 78, maybe, to get the act in motion. And then there was a whole study process that took place in the early 80s. I know we were involved in helping to guide the federal people around. They held a number of hearings. They had draft documents. So it took quite a while from 1975 till 1984 when the final report came out about whether to be a federal river or not.
And one of the reasons that it was not a federal river was what?
Well, the whole stretch in Sarasota County, and I think some of Charlotte, was eligible. But I think in the original conception of the Federal Wild and Scenic River Program, a lot of it was based out west, where a lot of the rivers were flowing through federal lands. And at the time, there was about 12 miles of the Myakka inside Myakka River State Park. But the rest of the Myakka, from the south boundary of Myakka Park down into Charlotte Harbor, there wasn't really any federal ownership, and there wasn't any significant public ownership. There was some, obviously, where bridges would cross the river, but you could put in at Snookhaven, and you could take out at Playmore, which was just south of the 41 bridge. But there wasn't any real public land to speak of. So I think the thinking was they could designate the Myakka, the 12 miles within Myakka State Park, but additional designation would require both the formation of some sort of body that would help to administer the river, as well as there would be a need for more public lands if it was going to be a federal wild and scenic river. And they did, I think they specifically suggested that there could be other alternatives. And so that was in 84. And so Bob Johnson, who had property along the river, I think at that point, he was a senator, a Republican senator from Sarasota, who introduced legislation in Tallahassee to make the Myakka he was hoping the entire Myakka from Manatee, Sarasota, and Charlotte would be a state wild and scenic river. And there were people in DNR that were very excited about that. And in fact, they thought it might be the first of ultimately possibly six state wild and scenic rivers. And Johnson was a fairly powerful senator, and I guess it seemed pretty innocuous what he was proposing. So as a result, in 1985, the Florida legislature passed an act designating the Myakka as the first state wild and scenic river. And that led, part of the requirements of the act was the creation of a council. And so, for whatever reason, Bob appointed me to the council. Now, all of the council members are approved by DNR, now DEP. So I don't know if he had the latitude to completely appoint me. It probably had to be approved by the secretary of DNR. But at any rate, that was the beginning of the Myakka River Management Coordinating Council.
And what has your role been in the Myakka River Management Council since then?
Well, since I think that some of the legislation was drafted fairly hastily, and there was no model. Like, they couldn't just copy off of some other state wild and scenic river. And so there were, they created positions. Some were designated positions that had to do with different agencies or entities, and some were more open-ended. But they failed to include any term limits in the original description. So as a result, I started serving in 85, and I'm still serving. And for many, but not all years, I've been chairman of the council. And what we say is you either resign or die in office. So I don't know which will be for me. But what's been good about that is we've had, I mean, Glenn Compton was also one of the original members. We've had a certain amount of continuity with those people that have interest in the management of the river are able to stay with it and provide that institutional memory and continuity. If there was a requirement that everybody leave after X number of years, we'd be deprived of that background information. So it's a strange structure, but I think it's worked pretty well for us. We're now in our 40th year.
And there's going to be a proclamation by the Board of County Commissioners about 50 years of the intention of the Board of County Commissioners in Sarasota County to protect the Myakka River.
Right. Our understanding is they do have a board meeting on December 16th of 2025, and we've heard rumors. I mean, it hasn't happened until it happens, but we're optimistic that we can learn more from board records and recognize a half century of the Sarasota County having an interest in protecting the Myakka, which, you know, is significant because with the exception of the conservation easement and the stewardship of Elizabeth Moore on the Triangle Ranch immediately upstream of Myakka Park, there hasn't been any real public protection or public acquisition until you get up to Crane Park. And then north of that, they've done a pretty good job with Flatford Swamp. And, somewhere in this whole history was when we were hired as part of the seven-county phosphate study to research Flatford Swamp. So Flatford Swamp is, a 2 or 2.5 square mile swamp upstream of Myakka City. And we were hired by Jim Lane, was it?
Jim Lane from Archbold.
Right. And so they had a contract to better understand the phosphate region. And so he hired us young people that didn't necessarily know better to go explore this 2.5 square mile swamp. And at the time, there were people that thought there might actually still be ivory-billed woodpeckers in there. So it was a forested swamp. And just to fast forward, I think a lot of people assume a swamp is a swamp and can handle as much water as you can put at it, but or into it. But I guess in the 90s, there was so much agricultural
tailwater
runoff that it changed the hydrology of the swamp, not drying it out, but making it wetter, and it killed a lot of trees. And I remember we led a Sierra Club outing into Flatford Swamp, and we got to a laurel oak, and there were cattails growing up in between the roots of the laurel oak. And so you look at that and you go, that's not right. Cattails should not be growing in between the roots of a laurel oak. So, yeah, there was too much water in there, and it killed the vast majority of the trees and then sort of converted it into more of a shrubby marshland with a lot of dead timber.
And at the same time, the Crowley Museum and Nature Center challenged the Water Management District, and they got a big cash settlement because the agricultural tailwater, which was from tomato fields adjacent to Flatford Swamp, had also killed trees at Crowley Museum and Nature Center.
So we're sort of taking some of this stuff out of sequence. We'll have to, at some point, patch this all over into a coherent chronological effort. But so something else that happened in the 70s is the same Ken Alvarez contacted us and asked us if we would canoe the river to explore its potential for addition as part of a Florida State canoe trail system. So this was after Ken Langland's expedition in 74 and 76. This probably would have been 77 or 78, I'm guessing. And my recollection of that is we put in Miaka State Park, and we went under the 72 bridge, and then we got about a quarter of a mile down and just hit a like wall of
water hyacinths. Yeah.
And so we had to, no one had really taught us or told us how to deal with that. We tried lying on the bow of the canoe and with our head over the bow like a figurehead and with our arms on either side and grabbing hyacinths and pulling them backwards. That might work in a narrow canoe, but we were in probably a pretty wide grumman at that point. And so, and then the other option is you go over to the edge of the river where it's shallower and you just get out and pull, or you can just unpack everything and portage around the jam. But, you know, what we concluded at that time was that it really didn't make sense as part of the Florida canoe trail system because of all the aquatic weeds. And that eventually changed when they started doing more herbiciding. And then almost coincident with that was the Sarasota County in the late 70s was interested in, this is probably an offshoot of the League of Women Voters' interest in wild and scenic designation. They were probably also interested in protecting the river. And so Sarasota County hired us to try and reconcile the soils maps with the vegetation, with the characteristics of the land along the river and whether the soils could be used as a means to guide development. And what we found was that the river has a not just a floodplain, but a plain where the river had previously eroded, and so all the soils were alluvial. The soils that you would be seeing on either side of the banks were redeposited sand where the river had eroded it and then had been subsequently deposited again. But outside of that were bluffs of actual either pure sand or sand and shell from earlier epochs, you know, Miocene or Pleistocene or whatever. That's where a lot of this fossil material is found. And so it didn't make a lot of sense because the areas that people would be most inclined to develop would be these high bluff areas, and those were right on the river. So it was going to end up making more sense to have setbacks based on distance from the wetlands rather than using soils.
Yeah, so the Miaka River in Sarasota County has an annual floodplain that floods every year, and it's occupied by cabbage palms, laurel oaks, and live oaks, and it floods every year or every other year, and so that is true for most of the river in Sarasota County, except for these bluffs that Jono has been referring to.
Right, but you can still, when it's in flood stage, you can still paddle down the river and see water leaving the river and flowing into a saw palmetto area. I think, you know, the characteristics change as you get further south. When you start seeing the tidal marsh, I think the flood elevations are less significant from freshwater, and you start having more issues with tidal flooding.
Yeah, and so we paddled the river following the rains of Tropical Storm Debbie, and it was really a dangerous river at that, with all of the rainfall from Debbie.
Yep. Yeah, it can really get going. It's there's a number of things that make the Myakka unique. One is that a lot of rivers sort of have a general trajectory. I mean, if you think about the St. Johns, we just think about it going from south to north, or we think about the Caloosahatchee going from east to west. If you were to draw a line from Tatum Sawgrass through the upper lake, through the lower lake, and just extend that basic bearing of the river, the mouth of the river would be somewhere just south of Venice Inlet. But instead, you get to a point and it makes like about a 120-degree turn and starts forming what further south would be called the Cape Hayes Peninsula. So when the river first turns, it's only about 6 miles from the Myakka River over to the coast, and then as it gets further southeast, it gets broader. I think it ends up, the western river bank is maybe 9 or 10 miles from the coast. But that space between the river and the Gulf Coast, at the bottom is thought of as a peninsula, even though it's just a space between a river and the Gulf, that old Gulf of Mexico.
You are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV 100.1 FM in Bradenton. And our guest today is Jono Miller. And Jono and I are talking about the history of Sarasota County's involvement in Myakka River issues. And then after this break, we'll be talking about some of the current issues that are going on in the Myakka River.
So some of the other unique aspects of the river. So I was talking about the change in direction, but one of the things that makes it distinct is it's a zero-flow river. Now, that may have changed with the changing irrigation practices, but there are no, unlike the rivers further north on the Gulf Coast of Florida, there are no springs that contribute any noticeable amount of water. There are records of people saying that the deep hole and the lower lake discharged at some points, and there's some minor seeps, I guess I would call them. But in general, the entire flow of the river is based on rainfall, and if it stops raining long enough, the river dries up, and it'll have pools where there are deeper areas where standing water, and it may be flowing subsurface, but you pretty rapidly get into this condition of how fast can you drag your kayak, because there just isn't enough water from the park south, probably down to maybe to Downs's Dam, which is no longer there. But so this no-flow characteristic is pretty distinctive. Another thing that made it the river distinctive is that there was no, at least in Sarasota County, I've heard stories that up in further north in the river, up more where the phosphate is mined, that there is naturally occurring cypress. But many rivers in the state, as you canoe along, you'll see large stumps of cypress that had been harvested, and the stumps are persisting. There's nothing like that along the river. We know where some cypress have been planted along the river, but there's no evidence that in the 1800s there were any tall cypress. And this is significant because the Myakka region was famous, at least from the 1800s and probably earlier. People probably figured this out, that the Myakka region was great for cattle. And part of the reason for that is that the the isolated wetlands, the shallow depressions that would be full of water in the rainy season and dry otherwise, those were grassy instead of having cypress trees. So if you were to go up into Hillsborough County or east to Hardy and DeSoto or south into Lee and Collier, all those wetlands would typically be forested with cypress trees. But in Sarasota, they weren't. And so the fact that they were grassy instead of forested made much better forage for cattle. So that was a distinctive aspect of the river. And I don't know why, but in 1989, the state did a river, what they called a river assessment. They studied a bunch of rivers in the state, and I don't know if it was out of convenience or what, but they ended up looking at 50 different rivers in the state of Florida. And those rivers, they figured that the total length of those rivers was 3,300 miles. Well, the Myakka in Sarasota, according to Bob Johnson's legislation, was 34 miles. So that meant it's just like a hundredth of the river mileage in Florida. So part of the problem we've faced in managing the river is that you could be familiar with 99% of all the other river miles in Florida and know how to get permits and manage things. But if you didn't have prior experience with the Myakka and just came in and started making assumptions, you could be way off. So that's part of the curse of being the first state-designated wild and scenic river, is that we have a bunch of requirements, some of which are state requirements that govern the open water and the adjacent wetlands, but the rest are local government, whether it's City of Venice, City of Northport, or Sarasota County. And people that are seeking to change the land use adjacent to the river have to be aware of those.
So part of the issue with it being a no-flow river and drying up is that when it's high flow, the alligators all disperse to the seasonal wetlands, and then when it's low flow conditions, they all come back to the river. And then also all of the seasonal isolated ponds on the landscape are they have high water levels and lots of productivity of fish and reptiles in the summer. And then when they dry down, all the wading birds forage on the concentrated food in the isolated wetlands.
Yeah, and there's at least one rookery still on the lower Myakka below 41, and then there was the rookery out at Deer Prairie Slough. We still see a lot of black-crowned night herons out there, but that was such a big rookery at one point that the state park built an observation tower for people to, you know, gaze and gawk at all these concentration of birds, and then for whatever reason it was abandoned.
I think it was during the time when there were very dry times in the Everglades National Park. Uh-huh. And then all the birds moved up to the Deer Prairie Slough Swamp.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So, Jono, there is a Sarasota County protection zone along the Myakka River. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, a little. So part of the research that was done to try and figure out how to implement the protection of the river, because obviously when you talk about a wild and scenic river, there's clearly an aesthetic component. It's not simply we want to keep all the reptiles and fish and birds, but that there's a goal of trying to keeping it look natural. Yet people obviously have property rights, and so it was trying to strike a balance between what would help keep it look wild and scenic and what would allow people to have an appropriate amount of development. So a firm called Hunter was hired, and they went up and down the river and actually tried to see how far from, in a variety of different conditions, how far from the river you could see into the adjoining landscape. And it varied considerably. Obviously, with where you were in a salt marsh area, it could be quite distant. And in a thick hammock, it could be different than flat woods. And so, but they came up with an average of 220 feet. And so the zone, the protection zone, was established at 220 feet. There's a 50-foot zone immediately next to the river that's supposed to remain intact. And then there's any buildings are supposed to be 150 feet back. And then there's a provision that the buildings can have some clearing around the building for fire. And there are additional requirements between that 50-foot buffer going all the way back into the 220-foot. So it's worked relatively well, but that's the basic concept. And that 50-foot starts from the edge of the wetlands. So if you wanted to do some sort of project along the river, you would need a permit from the state of Florida if it involved the open water or the wetlands. And there are also some permits you would need from the county. And then once you get past the wetland margin, then the municipalities or the county requirements would kick in.
So let's move on to talk about current issues regarding the Myakka River. And do you want to start with the levees in Hidden River?
Well, so there've been a lot of changes. Let's start that way. The Myakka is remarkably well preserved, and it's also abused and beat up. So more than half of the watershed is in some protected status, and more than half of Sarasota County. The Myakka watershed occupies more than half of Sarasota County. So when we think of Sarasota, I think a lot of people think of the non-Myakka portion, but it's a really big part of the county. So it was common for people to build dikes or levees to keep the Myakka River, particularly in flood stage, out and make it more suitable. So in Tatum Sawgrass, which is upstream of Myakka Park, there was a lot of diking. There was diking in what's now called Hidden River. So just north of Myakka River State Park, they erected a large berm or dike to keep the area that had been floodplain to minimize flooding in there to make it more suitable for cattle. That dike apparently extends in both, part of it's in Myakka State Park and part of it is in Hidden River. Well, the land that was historically used for cattle grazing behind the dike, someone got permission to zone that for residential lots. And that's been very problematic. There have been a number of flood events that have breached the dike and flooded homes. I was on a tour out there one time and saw a house, and they said the water was up to the eaves. And so that's a persistent problem. This area has been removed from the Myakka floodplain. And periodically, the Myakka reclaims that floodplain, and it's really bad for the structures in there. So we'd hoped in the wake of some of these hurricanes that there would be money available to buy out these frequently repeated, there's some technical term, but like the areas that flood repeatedly, government, some aspects of government have concluded, gee, this is not a great idea, we should make it possible for people to leave these areas and relocate elsewhere. But as of yet, there hasn't been a strategy to deal with that. Another levee or dike is the one that was built at the western end of Upper Myakka Lake that separated and Van Der Ijp Slough. And so that's also been breached. There's currently a gap in it. The last time I saw it, it was you could jump across it, but I'm told it's gotten wider. And so these dikes, or berms, or levees, are very problematic. Most of them were not engineered, by which I mean they were not designed to have some sort of solid core. They were just material piled up. And we saw this became an issue when water from the Cowpen Slough Basin flowed over and broke through a dike and flowed into the Philippi Creek Basin and flooded out Laurel Meadows last year. Now, in addition, so one strategy for landowners that were concerned about flooding was to build dikes or berms to keep water out. Further south, the Blackburns came up with two other strategies, and they had a lot of ranch land, particularly on the east side of the river. And they were concerned that too much of their land was flooding when the Myakka would flood. And so north of I-75, the river was connected up through what was called Curry Creek, and that would... In high water times, water would flow over to the coast, I guess to Roberts Bay. Was it Roberts?
Donna Bay.
Donna, okay. But then they also started another canal called the Blackburn Canal, which was further south and would be south of the, just north of the Jelks Preserve, I guess you could say. And it was interesting. They started digging this, and then they were partway through digging it, and... somebody said, gee, we probably ought to think about whether this is a good idea or not. So they hired an engineering firm, and they looked at the Curry Creek, and they looked at the Blackburn Canal, and they said, oh, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. It's not going to harm the bay at all. So go ahead and do it. Now, if you want to learn more about that, if you go to the Sarasota Water Atlas, there's a great report by Steve Swah. And he talks about some of these most significant hydrologic alterations of the Myakka. Unfortunately, he calls Curry Creek, I think that gets called Blackburn Canal, and he doesn't really deal with the Blackburn Canal. So as a result, there's been confusion over the years about which is Curry Creek and which is the Blackburn Canal. And I've been trying to push the county to find out what the current function of the Blackburn Canal is. Does it work in any real sense? What happens in high water events? We haven't heard back yet, but it would be interesting to know in terms of stormwater if that's functions at some point or is just sort of an odd hydrologic anachronism.
Okay, so the fall membership drive is going to be Wednesday, October 15th through Tuesday, October 22nd. And we want you to know that you can pledge support for our show, Our Changing Environment, by scrolling down. If you're making an online donation, you can scroll down to News and Public Affairs, and then there'll be a pop-up menu that will allow you to choose Our Changing Environment. And we hope that everybody listening will contribute to our show. And again, the dates are Wednesday, October 15th to Tuesday, October 21st.
So, Talk of the Town and WSLR News Roundtable, hosted by Carrie Seidman, returns Saturday, October 4th at 11 a.m. at Fogartyville. You're invited to be part of the live audience for this locally focused panel-type program, which will be broadcast on WSLR and live-streamed on YouTube. For more information and free tickets to the October 4th Talk of the Town, visit WSLR.org or call 941-894-6469.
The UF IFAS Extension will host Wild Sarasota Turtle Talk, Florida's tortoise and freshwater turtles, on Thursday, October 2nd, from 2 p.m. to 3 15 p.m. at Francis T. Bourne Jacaranda Library in Venice. Participants will learn about the differences between Sarasota's tortoise and freshwater turtle species. Most appropriate for ages 12 and up, this event will be held indoors in an air-conditioned room, so an extra layer is recommended. Advanced registration is required. More information is available at ufsarasotaext.eventbrite.com or by phone at 941-861-5000.
Well, that sounds like a great event, Ernest. We know we have three really different types of turtles. We have the freshwater turtles, we have the gopher tortoises, and we have the marine turtles. And Ernie Esteves tells this story about, I think, being on Anna Maria and watching as someone repeatedly picks up a gopher tortoise and carries it down and puts it in the Gulf so that it could swim out. And then the tortoise is not having none of it and will be climbing back out on the beach. So, yeah, people need to know the difference between some of these animals.
So, Jono, do you want to talk about the federal partnership designation?
Sure. So as we sort of previewed earlier, the federal government was interested in the Myakka being a federal wild and scenic river, but felt that only about a third of the area in Sarasota County qualified. And they sort of held out this vision of if there was actually a body that was involved in the management of the river and had a management plan, and there was more public land along the river, that it might make more sense. So the study for the Federal Wild and Scenic River came out in 84, which is roughly about the time that the Carlton Tract and the Pinelands Reserve property were acquired. So Carlton was a mix of land protection and water supply, and the Pinelands was a mixture of solid waste and land protection. And so those were two really big acquisitions along the river. And then there was the State Forest below 41. That acquisition was major land along the river. There was the Jelks Preserve. But following all of those, the county passed its land referendum to acquire environmentally sensitive land. Prior to that time, the county had a good record of acquiring environmental land, but it was always on an ad hoc basis. Some piece of property would be threatened or some opportunity would present itself, and then the county would go to the voters and ask them if they wanted to acquire it. The environmentally sensitive land program provided some structure to that so that anyone could nominate properties, and they would be evaluated by a citizen advisory board and recommended to the county. And to be, you know, be fair, a number of lots of parcels get nominated and don't get moved up to the county level because they're better opportunities. Since the adoption passage of the Environmental Lands Program, since the acquisition of Carlton and Pinelands, there have been about 20 other parcels of land along the Myakka that have been protected, so either through conservation easement or outright purchase. So right now there's far more land protected along the Myakka than there was 40 years ago. And so a lot of the river values, the scenic values that were identified in the federal study are there and are better safeguarded. And so Jamie Dubek-Racine, who was working with the National Park Service at the time, helped us become aware of the Federal Partnership Wild and Scenic River Program. And this is a program that doesn't involve federal land acquisition. There's no Smokey the Bear hats. It's all the land management is all done by the local governments, but it's a designation that brings prestige and recognition to the river, And it also, in the cases of the existing units of the Federal Partnership Program, has brought money. And this is great because, you know, we mentioned that the designation of the state wild and scenic river didn't have term limits. Well, it also didn't have a dedicated funding source. So all the work that's been done on the Myakka since then has either been out of the magnanimous efforts of the state DEP or through grant writing and finding funding sources for other projects. So, you know, the Weir Dam at the bottom of Upper Myakka Lake has been removed through that process. Just in the past year, the dam, the so-called Downs Dam at the south end of the park has been removed. But there hasn't been funding to do a lot of basic stuff. We were required by law since 1985 to do regular and periodic studies about the carrying capacity of the river. And as of yet, we haven't had one. So obviously, it would be great to understand how recreational use of the river is affecting both the river resources but also the experiences of the users. To do that, you need a recreational study. And in the Myakka, a lot of that might focus on the balance between people and alligators. We want the alligators to do well. They need to come out on the banks and sun themselves. If they're constantly disturbed and slide back into the water, then the alligators are not getting what they need, and the public that comes to the Myakka to see alligators, they're not getting what they need. So it's a lose-lose situation. So hopefully if we can get this bill that Stuby and Scott and Buchanan and others are supporting through Congress and get this federal designation, we would have no additional land use regulations, and we would have the recognition that the Myakka is due and probably some additional money to help us manage the river.
So, Jono, what other issues do you want to talk about regarding current issues that you want to talk about regarding the Myakka River?
Well, we always seem to have plenty of issues. In recent years, we've largely cleared up the situation with people looking for shark's teeth. A number of years ago, a gentleman was diving near Snookhaven and was attacked by an alligator, and he was looking for fossil material on the river bottom. And the story was a man attacked by alligator. But what a lot of people thought the story was, well, wait a minute, there's shark's teeth in the Myakka River. We thought we had to go to Venice. So Venice Beach or Caspersen Beach. So that led to a minor explosion of people looking for shark's teeth, and not just looking for shark's teeth, but actually excavating for shark's teeth, cutting down trees and putting them across the river to dam things up. I mean, it was getting really out of hand, and people were selling river bottom online so that then you would sort through your bucket of gravel to look for shark's teeth. And so we finally got clarification that you cannot do anything to disturb the river bottom. If you're walking in shallow water that's 3 inches deep in the river and you look down and see a shark's tooth, you can pick that up. But anything else, if you put your hand down and wave at it, if you pour a bucket of water on it, if you do any excavation or disturbance at all, that's illegal. So that's sort of subsided. But now we're dealing with an issue of the recreational alligator harvest, and this gets back to the alligators and people. We'd like to think that we know a lot of people come to the Myakka to see gators, and so if people are shooting all the gators or a significant portion of them, that creates a problem. And we've found that there have been a lot of gators taken in the Myakka River, and it seems a little odd to have a wild and scenic river where people are coming in hopes of seeing an alligator to allow a few people each year to remove gators. So we're trying to get some clarification about that. It would be great to have a resolution of the Hidden River situation with those people whose homes are repeatedly flooded. So, you know, that's been a problem that we're coping with. There's obviously, you probably read in the paper, there are emerging issues in Manatee County. As I said before, with the exception of the protection of Triangle Ranch, there hasn't really been any land protection strategy, either through acquisition, conservation easement, or purchase between Triangle Ranch and Crane Park in Mayaca City. And so we've been seeing increased development pressures up there, and that's affecting water quality in the river. That's it's outside the wild and scenic designation, so those protections don't apply up there. But we do have a representative from Manatee County, and the council, one of the council's powers is to offer non-binding advisory opinions to different entities. So that's an emerging issue. We have issues with illegal. There's some questions about mangrove pruning and how that gets enforced. There's some new land in Northport that sort of one of the last big undeveloped areas along the river in Welland Park. That's going to be proposed for development, and we don't know at this point how far setback that development will be and what its relationship will be with the river. So those are some of the issues that are current. And, you know, people are welcome to attend these Mayaca River Management Coordinating Council meetings. You can get in touch with Chris Oliver. The District 4 offices are in Oscar Shearer Park. And it's a great place to learn about what all the current concerns, the victories, and also the management issues that we're dealing with on the Mayaca.
You've been listening to Our Changing Environment on listener-sponsored WSLR LP Radio 96.5 FM, broadcasting from our downtown Sarasota studios on Kumquat Court. You can also hear our show on WBPV LP Radio 100.1 Bradenton or listen online. Today's show, number 70, featured local environmentalist and Our Changing Environment co-host, John O'Miller, talking about the Mayaca.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers.
Previous shows of Our Changing Environment may be accessed at WSLR Archives. Go to archive.wslr.org.
If you'd like to be notified about upcoming shows, you can join the Facebook group Our Changing Environment.
Tune in at 9 next week for a special membership drive show featuring both The Healthy Living Hour with Rebecca Acosta and Our Changing Environment.
And tune in at 9 a.m. 2 weeks from today on October 14th for the next episode of Our Changing Environment.
If you're interested in local public affairs, tune in every Thursday at 9 a.m. for The Detail, hosted by Kathy Antunes.
And don't forget to check out the live music, public affairs, and other special events at Fogartyville on Lemon Lane, just 6 blocks north of Main Street here in Sarasota.
Right now, stay tuned for Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! At 10 a.m.
Our theme music is Vicky's Vamp, composed and performed by John Lambie. Well, how did we do?
Yeah.